I just returned from spending a few days over Christmas with my family in Cincinnati. I love to go and visit with them. We have a pretty large immediate family. We have about 10 nieces and nephews, my sisters, their husbands, my parents, and then a set of grandparents. So the 20 of us gathered a few times at my parents' house, and one of the most joyful things that we do, at least I think, is that we cram into my parents' living room and we celebrate Mass. So we have the altar right there in the middle, and then all 20 of us crunched in, gathered around the altar, which is just a beautiful image to see all my nieces and nephews from 18 years old all the way to 4 and participating as they're able, even if that means running from couch to couch. Now, before you have an idealistic or perfect image of my family in your mind, let me shatter it to pieces. We're not perfect. Hardly any family is, right? We each have our struggles. We each have fractured relationships that need healing. We each have things that we need to keep trying at. But I love my family. I love spending time with them. They often give me homily material right after I'm spending time with them. I have to be careful, though. My parents listen to my homilies on the St. Jude's website, so I can't divulge too much. But I always think it's fitting that right after Christmas, we have this feast of the Holy Family. I think it's because in her wisdom, the church knows that most of us have just spent a lot of time with our families, for good or for ill. So it's a good time to examine family life, the ideal of family life. Again, each of us has our crosses. Each of us has our own picture of family and our own experience of family. But the church always holds up this ideal to us right after Christmas. We see it in the readings, especially in the relationships of the Holy Family, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. And we see it in our reading from Colossians, St. Paul speaking to us beautiful advice. If only we would take it, if only we would heed his advice to restore different familial relationships, perhaps that are fractured or struggling. I want to give you these lines as a sort of medicine and let them minister to you and your family. Paul says, "Put on as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, heartfelt compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness and patience, bearing with one another." We bear with one another, don't we? "And forgiving one another. And over all of these, put on love. That's the bond of perfection." This is the ideal to which God calls each family. But to put on these things, these virtues, gentleness, humility, above all, love, we have to take other things off. To put something on, you have to take something off. You have to take off vice to put on virtue. To put on kindness, we have to take off bitterness. To put on humility, we have to take off selfishness and pride. To be the holy and beloved family that St. Paul describes, we have to take off harshness. We have to take off impatience and unforgiveness. It only works if you take these vices off and then put the virtues on. And then we have this little, I think, a throwaway line from Paul that I just love. It's a bit of an aside, but he tells families to sing together. Surprise, surprise, I like singing. There was a rule at my family, no singing at the dinner table. I think it was specifically for me. But oftentimes when my family gets together, we sing. We sing karaoke, or we, you know, do sing-along songs in the car or something. I think there's something really healing and healthy for a family that sings. He says, sing spiritual songs and hymns together. And there's a risk, there's a vulnerability in singing together. And I know it's not everyone's cup of tea, but I think it is something that can really bind a family together if you would try it. So I just sneak that in there as a little suggestion. But then St. Paul, of course, at the end of this reading to the Colossians, seems to drop a bombshell. After he says all these beautiful things about putting on these virtues, he calls out each member of the family specifically. And it can make us squirm a little bit. You know, maybe there were elbows flying today at the different relationships he calls out. In addition to Holy Family Sunday, I like to call this Elbow Sunday. You have husbands elbowing wives and wives elbowing husbands and children elbowing fathers. But there is some truth in these words of St. Paul that need to come to us like a medicine. Because through the witness of the Holy Family, we can see that they're not unattainable. That these relationships and these strong words are certainly not derogatory toward any family member. And they should be interpreted always in the ideal and nothing short of it. This is what the church always holds up to us, the ideal family through the family of Joseph, Mary, and Jesus. And all three of these relationships, husbands, wives, and children, are necessary for the ideal. It's like a three-legged tripod. If one of them is wavering or missing or fractured, the tripod's not going to be as steady. And so we examine these relationships like we would examine the tripod. How can we firm these up? How can we be more steady as a family, forgiving one another, loving one another, so that we can stand more securely? And of course, St. Paul begins with wives. He encourages them to be subordinate to their husbands as is proper to the Lord. So as soon as I say that word subordinate, I know there's uneasiness, there's nervousness, there's suspicion. It makes us squirm. It's why I'm behind the pulpit today. I want to be able to duck in case anything comes flying at me. But I think it's because this word sub or under has been hijacked. When we hear under, we can think lower than or less important. And this is not the case. No one would think of when a person goes under a bomb shelter, that person is less important, that person has a lower dignity or place. The person who puts themselves under a bomb shelter, becomes subordinate to it, is actually preserved. They're actually revered as the wife should be to her husband. And this is the case, that the wife who puts herself under the care of her husband is protected, just like that bomb shelter analogy. The word subordinate literally means under the order. And so a wife who puts herself under the order of her husband's love is protected. She's secured. She doesn't have to worry if she's loved or revered, if she has worth or dignity. She knows it because her husband protects her under it. He doesn't dominate her when she is under his order. He's revering her and protecting her. And we see, of course, the model of the Blessed Virgin Mary standing out for wives in this regard. In our gospel, we hear that it's Joseph who receives this message in the dream to protect the family, to go to Egypt and to flee from Herod, then to come back to Nazareth. Mary had to put herself under the order of Joseph's love and follow him. And when she did, she was safe. She was protected in that flight into Egypt and then back into Nazareth. She's a great model for wives of how they can put themselves under the protection, the love, and the care of their husbands. And then St. Paul calls out husbands. He commands them to love their wives, to avoid any bitterness toward them. And then later he says, don't provoke your children. Maybe there was some provoking going on in Colossae, and maybe there's provoking going on in your homes. Husbands, don't provoke your children. Love your wives. A wife can only trust her husband if he makes his love and protection known, if he gives himself in this total, loving, free way, giving of himself in a way that preserves and honors and protects. Of course, Joseph is the model for husbands in this regard. Joseph protected the Virgin Mary. He loved her in a completely chaste and disinterested love. He didn't think about himself. He thought about Mary. He thought about Jesus and how he could truly love them and think of the other person instead of his own selfishness. And so Joseph is a great model and an intercessor for husbands. And then lastly, St. Paul calls out the kids. They don't get off the hook either. Children are instructed to obey their parents in everything because this is pleasing to the Lord. It can be hard for a child, especially a teenage child, to think, Mom and Dad have my best interest in mind when they say, don't hang out with those people. They're going to drag you down. Or you have a curfew. You have, you know, a time that you should be in bed. All of these rules can seem oppressing for children. But if they know that their parents do have their best interest in mind and love them and are trying to secure them and protect them, then the obedience can actually be a life-giving thing to the whole family, that the parents do have the good of the children in mind, and children are able to recognize this and see this. Of course, Jesus is the example of this. Jesus, who was that obedient son to Mary and Joseph, but also the obedient son to the Father. Jesus' obedience to the Father led him to the fruitfulness of the cross. His obedience led to our salvation. And so the obedience of children can lead to their fruitfulness and to their own salvation. These are the three relationships, the three legs of that tripod. This is the way of perfection, brothers and sisters. It's not some pie in the sky, even though each of us has our own reality. It's something that will bring us life. We have to take off those vices, put on those virtues, so that we can stand more securely as one family. So I urge you, brothers and sisters, God's chosen ones, present yourselves to the Lord and ask him for that grace to be holy, just as he and his family are holy.